Hello and welcome to the Middle East, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. It is, or it is almost a year since Shavkat Mirziyoyev is in power in Uzbekistan. During this time, a number of steps were taken, which in response have created a level of good feelings among optimistic circles, but there were also arguments in favor of extreme caution. Now, 1 year on, where do we stand in terms of Mirziyoyev's positioning? Are things any clearer about the future direction of the government? Do we know what his intentions are, where he is heading, and how do we see the future? This is our topic for today's Majlis. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Alisher Siddiq, Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service. Alisher Ilhamov is joining us, who's the Research Associate at the School of Oriental and African Studies, University of London, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlok Owazi. Welcome on board, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Hello.
Very nice to have you. Okay, Alisher, let's start with you. The latest development I see from your agenda today that some opposition activists in exile are contacted by authorities with the promise of safe back home. What is inside to this story?
Yes, indeed. Some of dissidents living abroad, journalists, former political activists, and a number of others, they were contacted by security services in their respective countries, or the relatives living in Uzbekistan were contacted by local authorities, and they were asked if they can come back. So they were guaranteed that everything will be peaceful and the government has nothing to persecute them for. So this is kind of a very selective process, I would say, because we are talking about probably several thousands of people living abroad, you know, and having the same status. But in kind of only selected people got this invitation back home.
To take it a little bit with caution, is it a big deal, Alisher?
Of course, because these people were seen by the previous regime as the enemies of the state, as traitors in some way. And for Mirziyoyev, probably for some people in his circle, it is it could become a good message to the outside world that we are changing, that we are getting better. Because the main hope in this for the government is to improve its image and possibly get the better investment climate. But from the other point of view, these people are not enemies of Mirziyoyev. They were, I mean, you wouldn't want to have somebody's enemies in your prisons, right? You would rather put your own enemies into the prisons. So the logic is kind of here.
Bruce, I was going through your Twitter feed today or yesterday. You also discussed this news and with some sort of caution. What's your take?
We need to know a little bit more about who exactly is on this list of people that were invited back. You know, like I saw the Azadlik thing this morning and it mentioned that, you know, Muhammad Salik, for instance, we didn't know if he was one of the people that was invited back or you know, contacted or not. So there's still some questions in my mind about exactly who we're talking about. Now, obviously, you know, anyone that has been on the blacklist in the past, if they're told that they can come home and their safety is guaranteed, then this is a good, this is a good thing. And it shows some progress in how the government's treating at least opposition figures of the past. I think the big caveat here for me anyway is, even if they did invite someone back like Muhammad Salik, for instance, a lot of these people have been outside the country for a long time, you know, and as Alisher said, these were basically enemies of Karimov, but a lot of whatever support that they would have had years ago is probably gone. So it's kind of safer to invite them back now. They're less likely to cause any trouble. One, because they might not have anything against Mirziyoyev himself. And two, just because they've been out of the country for a while, a little out of touch with their own support base. And it would require fairly substantial efforts to start lobbying against the Uzbek government.
So just to clarify that, is Soli in the list, Alisher?
He was in the blacklist, of course.
No, in the new list.
But He's not on the list at this moment.
Okay, like in general terms, do we know who are the people being contacted?
Yeah, we know these people were contacted at Azad League, and we talked to them. They explained in what form, how they've been reached out by Uzbeks. So as Bruce pointed out, these are the people who are not in particular actively opposition or even religious kind of personalities. Okay. You know, so these are kind of would be very normal people for Mirziyayev. And let's not forget, following the death of Islam Karimov, a lot of dissidents lining up to praise Mirziyayev's steps. Mm. And Mirziyayev's popularity is pretty high now in Uzbekistan, a year after Karimov's death. And every step that he's taking is viewed as a kind of a great result. But what in fact he was doing is just annulling some of previous policies. Not even in a full scale, but to the halfway through.
Yeah, okay. Alisher Ilhamov, irrelevant to the latest development, since Mirziyoyev came to power, did any opposition figure, the real opposition figure, return to Uzbekistan yet?
Well, as far as I know, no one has returned so far. Not exactly. The same could be told about the other kind of categories of dissidents, human rights activists, journalists. I'm a bit kind of skeptical about this kind of initiative to invite some of dissidents, refugees living abroad. If they wanted kind of indeed to change the policy, as Alisher is saying, we don't see kind of change of policies. We see some kind of efforts which look be kind of a PR for the regime, just to improve its image, but not to go for substantial changes. If they wanted to really to kind of make some changes, they would first release all political prisoners or start releasing. So far, they released only one person, Mr. Musai, but it's again could be seen against background of kind of dialogue with UN human rights mechanisms, but not going beyond that. Or they could just, for instance, allow those dissidents within the country to leave the country. You know, some of them still actually not being able to receive exit visas and permission to leave the country. For instance, today, one of them, Timur Karpov, a human rights activist and journalist, he's complaining that for 2 months he is not able to get permission to leave the country.
Talking about the opposition figures, some of them, as you said, were released inside the country, like human rights activists or journalists like Bekjana, for example, a long time prisoners in the country. And when you put these two together, like the latest development of contacting the exiled dissidents and release a few dissidents within the country, what does it say to you?
First of all, most of them were kind of released at the beginning of this year, not lately. Only one person, Musaev, was released just several days ago. Only one person out of hundreds of thousands.
But there are several other activists being released, isn't it?
No, the first of all, those who were released at the beginning of 2017, not recently, but at the beginning or at the end of last year, their prison terms were over. They just didn't extend the prison term. There was not even amnesty.
Just to move on from this topic, Alisher Siddiq, I'm talking to you. On one hand, we see this list. Also, we see some dissidents being released from jail. But on the other hand, we see a situation of Gulnara. She's behind the bar, or maybe she's in the house arrest. And today I've seen some reports that crackdown going on to seize her properties in Moscow. What is that? How to understand why she's the target?
Exactly. This is something very confusing situation, because on one hand, we have Karimov, who is from, according to them, being immortalized in a form of monuments, statues, streets being named, and so on and so forth. And on the other hand, his daughter, who is directly the result of her father's policies. Yeah, she was, according to all reports, accounts, she was acting as a patron for businesses. And businesses in Uzbekistan, they needed a patron because of a system built by her father, basically. So she's kind of became enemy to a big circle of very powerful personalities back then. So now that's kind of backfiring, basically. We see that they don't want her to talk, basically, to express, because we don't know what they very cautious about what would she say in the trial if it's open, yeah? Mm. Because even the current prime minister could be in some way mentioned in that trials.
Okay, Bruce, I don't like to really dwell a lot about Gulnara, but just the final point. So how do you see the Gulnara story end?
She's an easy target for the Uzbek government. I mean, she wasn't popular among the Uzbek people when she was free and roaming. She had her own television station and all kinds of things. And she was just constantly trying to get into the spotlight every chance she could. And so this is an easy one for the Uzbek government, because hardly anyone is on her side. Hardly anyone ever really was on her side, except for a few close associates. So it makes the government look like they're really doing something to clean up the mess that, you know, she created. In the meantime, of course, the Uzbek government stands to get back quite a nice amount of money here, I suppose, if they play their cards right. It's not just the property of Moscow. It's other assets that have been seized around the world. So we're talking about, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars that they could bring back to Uzbekistan, which would be welcomed by the government. So this, you know, this was just an easy one for the Uzbek government to do, because she really doesn't have anyone on her side, and pretty much everyone's against her in Uzbekistan.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so moving on from Gulnar, I guess the you know, talking about the 1 year of Mirziyoyev in power, I guess the cross-border activities were making headlines throughout the year. How big of a deal this proved to be, Bruce?
Well, I think you'd have to qualify this as the biggest success of the Mirziyoyev administration so far. Relations with the neighbors are just improved immensely over what they were under Karimov. You know, the Prime Minister Abdullah Aripov was just in Kyrgyzstan last week. You know, these kind of meetings just didn't happen, you know, when Karimov, the last year's Karimov, was around. Mirziyoyev seems to get along with the Tajik president very well, which certainly wasn't true of Karimov. You know, there's if you follow Uzbek news, even their own media, Gazeta.uz and Uzdaily and things like that, you see that there's constantly meetings for various, you know, trade questions, border questions going on with all the other Central Asian countries. Every month there's somebody meeting somebody else from one of the other countries to discuss some of this stuff.
Yeah, but is it leading to something in practice?
Well, it certainly engendered better feelings on the part of the neighbors. I think that they're breathing a lot easier because they think that Mirziyoyev is going to be someone that they can actually deal with. We don't have a lot of action, but we have a lot of promises, although I would point out that certainly the Kazakh government seems to think that their border with Uzbekistan is finally almost all demarcated. And according to reports coming from Kyrgyz media, their border is actually with Uzbekistan is being marked more and more. There's still about 200 kilometers of it that are in dispute, but that's a lot of progress over what it was. And I think one of the other big things we have to remember is that, you know, in the past, we used to hear a lot of reports come out from along the Uzbek-Kyrgyz border about shootings, smugglers that were shot, sometimes shootings between border guards. I haven't seen any of that in a few months now, which shows that tensions, I don't know, maybe they're not reporting it, but I can't believe that's true. So I got to believe that tensions have calmed a lot along the borders in the Ferghana Valley, which is nothing but good news for regional relations and for the people living in those areas.
And also these days, there is no tension on the other side of the border, like in Kyrgyzstan too. Like, we have not seen any incident like the ones we have seen in Osh in the past. But moving on, Alisher Siddiq, economy was another front, especially when remittances were declining from Russia. Did this improve in any way? Are the people any better off today?
Mirziyoyev is kind of learning, trying, and unfortunately in economy, experimenting on population merely. It's still authoritarian state. It's still one person's decision on economic policy. Yeah. So he started with the chicken and the eggs and the lemon gardens. Then he moved on to some exotic trees like olives. That were all set during the first weeks and months after he came to power. On economic level, the government started exercising the idea that everybody can become a businessman. So if we give people a small credit, they will start launching their own firms and their own enterprises, which didn't happen, but on the other side, dried out all the resources, you know, like currency resources. Banks are empty now. We're talking to bank officials. They say we are empty. We don't have money to for anything. Yeah. In Karimov time, it was very difficult to get anything, to make anything. But now banks are empty. They cannot lend money to purchase cars for not in that amount anymore. We'll see. This is the most controversial part of his economic reforms. Then a lot of promises of investments, you know, from Turkey. They claim to have a lot of promises. Nothing came. We don't see anything. We don't see Turkish companies coming and starting ventures. The same goes to China, to other countries. We just don't see, you know, kind of businessmen coming in a big amount. On Russian part, yes, there were a number of projects, but these projects, majority of them were already worked out during Karimov's tenure. So the oil import from Russia, the couple of new oil and gas projects, these things were always on the table. And on the business side, the good sign was that kind of local producers, local companies, they were a little bit better, you know, relieved from additional checks by tax authorities, other authorities. But mainly the economy stayed much the same, even worse. The prices were very high. They're still struggling. This is you were right. That's a major issue, which Mirziyoyev has very little idea how to resolve it.
When you were talking about, I was thinking the chicken farm initiatives, what happened to that. But the other point that you raised, Alisher, the investment.
We say eggs were eaten, chicken were fried, and lemon trees dried out.
Okay. The other point, Alisher, you were saying that the investment is not coming from Turkey or China as it was promised. And usually when a country little bit opens up, investors rush towards it. But so what is stopping the Turkish or the Chinese investors coming to Uzbekistan?
The major element is investors look into the plight of a business already working in Uzbekistan. So local businessmen, you know, the direct investments, you know, those investors, they talk to whom? To businessmen on the ground. And when they say it's not good here, guys, you know, nobody's coming, like, it's a very painful legacy of Karimov, which will take years to recover from. I'm sure Alisher Ilhomov has more to say on this, you know.
Yeah, so let me bring on Alisher here. I kind of guess what your response might be to this, but what's the states of freedom of press today? Or did this little bit of feeling of opening, let's say, had any impact on Uzbekistan's appalling human rights, Alisher?
Actually, on the one hand, we see some kind of relaxation, I would say, in the public sphere.
Yeah.
There is a kind of explosion of activities in social media, and some local media outlets is reporting more kind of boldly and more critically. And so there is some improvements, you know, evidently taking place. One can't deny that. So the people less fearful to kind of share their views, even critical views of the current state of affairs. So, but, you know, mass media is a part of the civil society, we should realize. And so the government, if you want kind of really change the situation, change the status quo, especially on institutional level, they need to kind of adopt some policies to provide more freedom, civic freedoms, freedom of association, first of all, and freedom of speech. So, you know, the situation here from the point of view of regulation remains the same as in the Karimov era. So there's still kind of restrictions, the same restrictions on the freedom of association. And we don't see kind of appearance of new really independent mass media. You know, but the recent crackdown, which we saw a couple of days ago on the International Press Club, and also on the TV station, as you know, some kind of programs which were the first signs of opening the, and kind of engaging in dialogue with the audience, with the population, also sending kind of a signal to the society and to mass media. So the people now in some confusion, what will happen next after this kind of crackdown and just quite abusive treatment of journalist Behzod Kudratkhodiaev, I think. So it's the people a little bit in confusion, what will happen next, whether the government will actually take further steps to kind of towards opening, or it will kind of close the door again. So this remains to see what would happen next.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. I remember in one of our previous discussions on the Majlis, the former U.S. ambassador to Uzbekistan, John Herbst, was saying that there will be opening in Uzbekistan, but it will come extremely slow. Maybe this is what we are seeing in the country, maybe not. But anyhow, let's do a little bit more about the future. And more importantly, what do these steps say about Mirziyoyev's intentions? Hey, everyone. Before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like Majlis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we are discussing Mirziyoyev's 1 year in power in Uzbekistan. Joining me in the discussion are Alisher Siddiq, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service, Alisher Ilhamov, research associate at the School of Oriental and African Studies, University of London, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen. Okay, so 1 year on, Bruce, enough time to understand at least his intentions. So what are his intentions?
Well, certainly in terms of foreign policy, he wants Uzbekistan to become a regional trade hub and open its borders up a little bit more so to the passage of goods through Uzbekistan. And some of those goods would obviously stay in Uzbekistan. So, I mean, that's one of the pluses. His domestic policies, I mean, I still, you know, I agree with what's been said here. I don't see a whole lot of difference in the way that they're governing their own people. They haven't eased up any of the restrictions on freedom of press, freedom of assembly, rights to organize your own political parties, things like that. That still stays the same as it was under Karimov. I think the big difference is, and this might be a kind of a disguise that Mirziyoyev is using, is that he's really blaming a whole series of officials for all the problems they have in a very public way so that the people can see, you know, these prosecutors are thieves and, you know, he just keeps going from group to group. So he's kind of sparked hopes among the people that this is something of a cleanup of the government, which kind of at that point, the people don't pay as much attention to the fact that their rights situation is not improving. What they're looking at now is that Mirziyoyev is taking on the corrupt bureaucracy that was left to him, and he's trying to clean it up. And there is a hope from that the standard of living will improve inside Uzbekistan, and maybe it will. You know, he's kind of taken the attitude with some of these different government agencies and ministries of, I want results and I want them now or you're going to be fired. It sounds good when you say it on TV. How much of this can be accomplished on the ground, I don't really know. But certainly, like I said, in terms of basic rights, I don't really see any change at all. But there is probably a new sense of optimism that maybe as he's dealing with the economy and trying to find solutions to their economic problems, that at least the standard of living will come up, which might be enough for most of the Uzbek people for at least a few years. That could do it for them, I think.
Okay. Alisher Siddiq, what's your take on his intentions, at least?
Yeah, we see the guy has no vision for long term. You know, he doesn't express what kind of country he wants to see. Yeah, his vision basically repeating the same idea that Karimov founded, sort of continuing the way it was developing under Karimov. But he did not present his own vision, you know, how he sees Uzbekistan in 5 years, in 10 years, what exactly he wants to do, what is his attitude towards secularization or religion or political situation. maybe it's because of lack of knowledge in or lack of advisors. I'm not very much sure, but seems like he's just first year enjoying the power, right? He has been extremely dynamic, traveling on helicopters from one region to another, which under Karimov was not the case. Wherever he was traveling, people were forced to clean streets, clean rubbish. He was blatant. He was screaming, saying anything, starting from regulating wedding parties to, I don't know, to minor issues, you know, some, you know, construction and so on and so forth. So his long-term vision is not clear. And the only thing that I was kind of sensing from his statements is that he wants to stay long. And in a couple of statements, he say, if all of us want to stay longer, yeah, what we should do this. He, again, treating himself as a father of the nation, kind of saying, I'm trying to teach you this, you know, I'm trying to teach you how to talk. He said it as if he was taught how to talk. Yeah, under Karimov, you know, he was almost kind of dozen of years under Karimov. He was never shown on television himself. Yeah. He was not a public politician. And in 1 year, he is in a position to teach others to become public politicians. He never expressed his opinion regarding reforms of the security services, primarily National Security Service. That was the wall for him that he couldn't even enter, you know. Maybe there were something going on under carpet which is hidden from the public, but he never expressed anything in this regard. He was making very clumsy statements, like stuff like, I hate prosecutors. So he said it. And the music he likes, he said that the writers should write 2 books a year, you know, that's and they can do it. The TV was with him, showing him from different angles, making him like someone who is have more like human face. He has family, you know, wife was there. His first year in power was a bit of learning and experimenting. And the main thing on economy, I forgot to mention that the whole year attempt to move to free currency is still ongoing, and we don't know how it will work out, whether it will become a whole disaster or it will be a big success. This is another big puzzle for me for the next year.
Okay, let's take briefly, Alisher Ilham, your point. So do you agree what has been said about the question on his possible intentions? Action is aside, but at least the intentions.
His intention is clear to change the status quo, to improve the situation in the country, especially economically. But I agree with Alisher, it doesn't look to have a clear agenda, what kind of agenda he's pursuing. It's at least unclear to us. And one of the reasons is that he's the only person who's speaking about reforms on the top level. Actually, we don't know who is in his team and whether he's attracted any kind of people to his, for instance, from the abroad. There is a big number of Uzbeks working and living outside of the country, has a good experience working with international institutions, including in the economic and financial sector. It doesn't look like he's inviting, still relying on the same kind of group of old officials who work under Karimov, who made a career under kind of Karimov, and who adopted a certain political culture, including him, which is very much authoritarian, old style. And this is kind of making me worrying what kind of reforms he may and will be able to pursue. The second, my suggestion would be to at least to look at the example of neighboring Kazakhstan. Also, can be presented as a good example of good governments, and also in terms of freedom and democracy. But still, situation in comparison to Uzbekistan is much better. That's why Uzbekistan is still struggling to attract investors. So if the Mirziyoyev at least recognize that this Kazakh model would be at least an observable period in the first 3-4 years to be a kind of model then actually most of the society would welcome this kind of move.
You know, for me it appears not Kazakh model, but I see somewhat Turkmenistan model in what's happening in today's Uzbekistan. But unfortunately, we have to conclude the discussion. Alisher Siddiq, you were pointed talking about 1 year of Mirziyoyev to be his first year of an experiment. So given his performance during this year, how do you see the upcoming 2 or 3 years?
Very difficult one. Again, if you remember, 1 year ago, we had the same majlis. We were trying to look into what Uzbekistan would look like under Mirziyoyev. Since even back then, we had very little information. The information that we had that he was brutal, that he was harsh. Now, after 1 year, I can say he's, at least on the public, he plays the soft game, nice person game. I'm nice. I'm with people. I'm a people's person. Mm. So his model is like more populistic in a way that he wants that recognition of people. And that's kind of a, will continue, I think, that's trend. And that very easily can turn into praising, yeah, into cult of personality. That's the danger there. So if he can stop it, if he can withstand it and move on to politics, you know, living, because eventually the reforms for Uzbekistan is a difficult, it's a shocking period. It's not going to be a nice thing. I think a couple of difficult decisions are ahead of him, especially for the next year, what to decide with the National Security Service, which is believed to be the main obstacle in gaining the whole power of in Uzbekistan. So now it is a sort of a check and balance of Uzbek version, the only version it can be now. It's between the executive power, like Mirziyoyev, and the security services. So they're not letting each other to get mad, to get crazy. So boss kind of control each other in a way. And once he gets the whole power, that will be kind of a slight new world, even in Uzbekistan.
Yeah, I was curious and I was wondering when you were talking, Alisher, how much time he has to show some real progress?
It depends. Progress in economy takes much longer, of course, because investors are not rushing into Uzbekistan. It's going to be very tough. Political progress can be made overnight. Yeah, he can just order the whole progress overnight. And but they believe that the country is not ready. People are not ready for this. So you see with the what you mentioned already previously, that his experiment with the free speech, sort of live shows, talk shows, discussions on TV, finished like 4 months, 5 months after started. Because it's already showed accidentally exposed deeper problems that would lead not to some secondary officials, but to the top management of the country.
Okay.
So that's going to be tough.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's take briefly Bruce and Alisher Ilham of your points on that. So how do you see coming 2-3 years going forward?
I'll let Alisher Ilhamov go first.
Okay, so I think, yes, he has raised expectation a lot of people within the country and outside of the country. This is, on the one hand, I think a positive side, actually, because at the beginning, kind of, he was assuming the power, actually, probably nobody was expecting this kind of opening this space for debates, for discussions, and all relaxation of public sphere, which is good, actually, developments, I think, so far. Of course, it's far from being enough, but the expectations have risen enormously. Even me, actually, despite being very much skeptical about the overall course and also the specific kind of areas of performance, I have some expectations, I have some hopes. We see some very minor improvements, which is were not predicted and even foreseen last year. But, you know, this is high expectations also kind of bear some risks for Mirziyoyev himself. If he doesn't realize those and meet those expectations in close future, I mean, the higher expectations, the shorter period would people accept for kind of seeing the results of this kind of a new climate, then that his popularity will plunge in also dramatically. And that actually, in that case, he will be hardly be able to rely on this kind of mass and popular support. So now he has good momentum for kind of pursuing the agenda of reforms. He has some kind of popular support, some popularity. If he uses kind of this political capital kind of wisely, he may succeed, you know. But the problem is that actually he's, as we said, he's moving very slow, you know. We don't see agenda, we don't see a program, we don't see people behind him who are working for him, who is in his team. I see the high risk for him within kind of this maybe 2-3 years period, and after which will be kind of a huge confusion and the frustration. And we'll see if he doesn't use effectively this momentum.
Okay, Bruce?
Can I add something here very quickly? Because okay. I was trying to summarize, you know, my opinions, mm-hmm. what changed actually under Mirziyoyev. In one word, you know, under Karimov, the situation was kind of a steadily bad, right? Like nothing was happening. Under Mirziyoyev, the situation got some dynamic improvement. You know, like minor things, yes, everything is minor. But the only thing that it showed, the whole exercise, that just a change of power is already a positive thing. It doesn't matter whether it's Mirziyoyev, whether it's Azimov or Safoyev, whoever would come after Karimov. And if it happens from time to time, regularly, every 8 years at least, you know, that's going to be good. I mean, every 5 years is better. Every 8 years is okay. Every 20 years is very bad.
Okay, I see some question marks about the political thinking of Mirziyoyev there. Bruce, briefly, please, your prognosis about the future.
First thing I would say is that there are a lot of limitations on what he can do. Now, he's only been in power for a year. He's trying to change a system that was created over 25 years. Obviously, he's got his own personal interests at work here, too. You have to be careful how quickly you lift the lid on some of these things, or it can get away from you fairly quickly. You know, the economy is something that he really has to concentrate on, because that's how he's going to endear himself to the people. And he, you know, as I said, he's limited in what he can do. We've mentioned, you know, Chinese investment. But the fact is that China has probably invested as much money in Uzbekistan as it's going to. It's invested in pretty much all the projects that are of interest to China. So you can almost forget about any more Chinese money. Not any substantial amount will come there. Can he get Turkey to come in and help out? You know, that's a big question. Can he get the West to come in and help out? He's going to have to give something back in return, and we have no idea what that is. So he's got quite a battle. It's not entirely up to him. Now, the one thing that we haven't mentioned too much is what happens if there's a security problem, because that will derail any plans or any possibility of reform in the country. There have been attacks in Uzbekistan in the past. We've seen them in 1999, the bombings in 2004, Bukhara, Tashkent, you know, I mean, so if something like that happens, then of course all bets are off and we go right back to the hardcore iron fist system of Karimov. But if that doesn't happen, he's still got a lot of challenges in front of him. I would think that, you know, as Alisher Sadiq said, that the people are probably going to be patient. He probably has more than just 2 or 3 years to get this resolved. If he can show even slight progress, I think the feeling of optimism many people in Uzbekistan have that the future might be better will probably last for a while, as long as he can show incremental progress over the course of the coming months.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Also, big thanks goes to Alisher Sadiq, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service, and Alisher Ilhamov, research associate at the School of Oriental and African Studies, University of London, for your time in Thoughts today.
Thank you.
And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.